You're listening to Radio Aryan at RadioAryan.com.
Hello, and welcome to Truth Without Radio. Today's date is Friday, the 8th of September, 2017. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks. Of course, I'm joined by the producer of Adolf Hitler, the greatest story never told, Mr. Dennis Wise, and his microphone's working this week. Dennis, how are you doing?
Fingers crossed, I'm okay. Big technical changeover of £3 lead.
You'd be surprised. It can make a really big difference, just a new USB lead. I got a new microphone a while back, and it just wouldn't install on the computer. It was quite an expensive mic as well. And then as soon as I bought a new lead for it, it all worked fine. And what they'd done, they'd sent a really cheap one out in the packaging. That was how they were able to lower the cost of the mic, is to send out cheap bits and pieces that come with it.
£3, surely.
Yeah, well, it seems to be working. Touch wood, we'll be able to get back to normal. Yeah, and I guess, you know, you must have been spending some time searching high and low to get this lead, because you haven't done any more work on your new series, Dennis.
No, it's not that I haven't done any more work. It's just that it's proving to be a real pain, and I need at least another week on it to get, because I've got to build it up myself, this one. There's no actual footage for me, so I've got to go into Photoshop and, you know, design my own things, and it just takes time.
Can you give us a hint as to what it's going to be about, the next chapter?
Yeah, well, it's like I said to you the other week, I'm looking at the side of Freemasonry, which it's often accused of, and that is of occult and black magic. So it's a difficult subject to start with, and because there's not much information out there, or, I mean, there's plenty of occult documentaries on Hitler and the Third Reich, but try finding someone on Freemasonry, and it's a struggle.
Well, you know, the occult means hidden, doesn't it? It means occluded, something that's secret.
Yeah, I mean, it means that, but it's used in other ways.
So secret society is an occult society, isn't it?
Well, it is, but it's like the Freemasons, the dodgy. It's like, you know, these days they say, we're not a secret society, we are a society of secrets. Well, if that's not double talk, I don't know what is.
Yeah, the way they advocate to change things and to turn everything on its head and to get us worshipping ourselves instead of worshipping God and promoting liberalism and race mixing and gay marriage.
All this communist stuff.
Yeah, and it all comes from Freemasonry. And originally those things would have been, you know, black magic acts, sodomy, pretending to be getting married. That would be the
homosexuality is linked with that.
Yeah, well, it was like a black mass, wasn't it? They would do the reverse of the Latin mass, and that was a black mass. The reversal of marriage would be this gay marriage, sodomy, and mocking of the ritual. And now we're being told this is the same as normal marriage. We've told it's legal, and sodomy is the same as the act of marriage. That's black magic in itself, isn't it?
Well, I mean, what annoys me about the fact that men can marry men is that they've always been around gays and homosexuals, but they've always like had the limitations in society. Now all of a sudden it's been like they've been anointed and accepted, whereas it goes against everything those Christians go against. But obviously we're under a bit of fire anyway, so, you know, with Babylon here we come.
Well, I think there's other bits to it as well. I mean, that's a bit that people wouldn't realise was really black magic. But these oaths that they take, that these Freemasons
blood
oaths, and what they do to them, I mean, that seems to me as if it's ritual sacrifice when they kill people and take their tongue out, and what is it, they leave them on the seashore, something, all these different rituals that they do to them if they break their oaths.
That's right.
And they do this.
That's right.
I mean, that's a ritual human sacrifice, isn't it?
Yeah, well, all that comes from Jewish mysticism, all this child sacrificing and, you know, all this kind of thing. It all comes from one direction, you know what I mean?
And you've got that's before you start looking into their demon, calling up demons and calling up angels. And
yeah, well, I'm a great believer that they have mastered that, and I'm hoping to prove that.
Well, they look They do. They look up to the Kabbalah, don't they? That was a huge influence on Freemasonry, was the Kabbalah. And that's all about calling on different angels and demons.
Yeah, for different deeds,
yeah. People fell for this. These Christians, intelligent Christians, Catholics and Protestants, they fell for this.
Emperors,
Yeah, they fell for it in the Kabbalah, and they thought, well, because we're calling on angels, and these must be good guys. But it's the same. It's the same people that, or the same entities that Aleister Crowley was calling upon.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Manly P. Hall said something to what you just said, like where he was saying where it wasn't that evil. And obviously, you're saying that they all fell for that, and it is evil, which is exactly what I'm saying in this documentary. You know, demons are demon. I don't give whatever it's called, Lucifer, whatever.
Well, they're seeking to get supernatural forces to do their bidding. Instead of doing what God wants, they're looking to get supernatural things to do what they want. I mean, sometimes I'm unsure whether angels, demons, whether they're the same thing, really. I mean, fallen angels, we're told, we've got fallen angels on Earth, and fallen angels would be demons, wouldn't they? So the only ones that they'd be able to contact would be evil spirits. You've got this angel that supposedly appeared to Muhammad and quoted the Quran to him. And that was obviously an evil spirit, but he called himself Gabriel. So
that's a weird name for an angel to talk to a Muslim, isn't it?
Yeah, when you think about it, everything has to obey God. Demons would still have to obey God. Demons could be angels. It could have been the angel Gabriel, but it was a demon when it was speaking to Muhammad and an angel when it was talking to the Virgin Mary. But they all have to obey God. Even Satan has to present himself before God in the book of Job, and he has to obey him. So, sometimes I think, is that what's going on? Could be.
Well, their God is they call it the great architect of the universe, but their God is actually Jebulon, which is three gods in one, which is Jehovah, Baal, and I think it's Horus. They're all short for them three gods. So it's kind of a mixture of it. So whether or not they're trying to play the odds, I don't know.
Well, it's just like an idol that they've created out of them, isn't it, really?
Well, that's the thing. These Christians in Freemasonry think that they're actually, when they say God, that they mean their God, but obviously they don't.
Well, that's the big con of it, isn't it? I mean, Freemasonry says, well, if you believe in God and if you've got a holy book, then you can become a part of Freemasonry, because it's all the same God that we worship. He just manifests in different ways. And that's the central bit behind Freemasonry, is that all religions are the same. And then leading on from is all the human races are the same, and they can all be blended together.
Yeah, well, it levels everything out and demeans everything then.
Well, they're the ones that have chiefly been used to forward these Jewish plans, but it's the Jews that are behind the Freemasons. I mean, we were talking just before we went on air, weren't we, about how you're still getting criticism for saying it's not the Jesuits. And people bring up all these different conspiracies, don't they? Knights Templar.
Well, it's a conspiracy to get the Jews off the hook, because let's be honest, any sensible person knows who the power is today. Because you criticise Israel and the Jews and you just get a world of hassle. But I can criticise Jesuits, Knights of Columbus and Malta all day long. I'm not saying they don't have some influence, some of them, but certainly not to the extent of what these people are saying. And most of them only come to the front when Rothschilds are in charge, like after and before World War II. So during World War II, they were never about, because they were knocking them down like flies.
Well, Jewry is always the connecting factor, isn't it? Whichever secret society you look at, you'll see that it has a connection to Jewry in some way.
Yeah.
And even the ones which aren't openly occult secret societies, like the intelligence services and the secret police, they're all interconnected with Jewry. So you've got the occult ones, and you've got the open ones, which are the intelligence services, they are secret societies. They grew out of the secret societies. Yeah, yeah. These Freemasonic networks, that's where they would get their information from. And the Jewish networks, the banking networks that they had, they all sort of grew together. And then you end up with the secret service. And that's why you end up with the Rothschilds being involved with the intelligence services, and you end up with their news company right next to the Centre for the Intelligence in Britain, MI5, right next door to
Reuters. Yeah, and if you see the MI5 Reuters building, and, it's Babylon.
Yeah, Reuters and ARP, isn't it? The two main news agencies, and they're both owned by Jews.
And of course, it's all filtered, isn't it? That's why we don't hear anything about Palestine these days.
Well, you know, there was a big exposure in the 70s of how a lot of these journalists were working for the CIA, working for these intelligence services.
Yeah.
Because it's all linked up together. It's like a secret society within our society that works against the best interests of the rest of us. It's not just Freemasons. It's the intelligence services. It's the mainstream media. They're all linked up together, and they're all hobnobbing together at their parties. And the secret society part of it, the Freemasonic side of it, the people join that so that they can get ahead in business, because they know they're going to be meeting up with these important people while they're there in the lodge. So all these different aspects of it, and it's the ones at the very top that are the ones that are the most wicked and that know what really goes on, and these rituals that they go through, and these summoning of these demons. And that's why, you know, this is why you got pop stars talking about Aleister Crowley and saying what a great influence he was. And it's mainly only us nationalists that speak out against Crowley, you know.
Well, yeah, because what he was doing was evil. But, I mean, look at Beyonce's eyes in some of them photographs, and it's obviously she's been taken over by some kind of a demonic force at some stage of that performance. And, of course, Crowley was an expert in using these drugs to get to that level, this sex magic, which was what all the 70s culture was about, really, drugs and making love.
Yeah, sex magic, that's right. That's a large part of it. We're told always free love and free sex, and pretty much what people are doing are rituals, sex magic rituals, tantric sex. If you look at the occult sex magic that they used to have, that's what people are practicing. And these orgies, people are watching pornography, and you know what goes on in that. And it's basically what witches would do in the past.
Well, that's true. Can I just mention this before I forget? I was reading about Australia, and there at the moment Australia being the paedophile capital of the world, a judge openly came out and said that the guy on trial, because he didn't ejaculate in the child, he gave him a lesser sentence. And adding on to that, he turned around and said, really, when we're looking at these laws, they're a little bit out of date now, you know, when you look at the homosexuality, how this is all taking place today. It's a freer society. These paedophile laws are a little bit out of date, especially, of course, now when we've got abortion that's free at hand and contraceptives, because usually the main argument against paedophilia is incest in the families and things like that. But I mean, the guy's an absolute sicko, but he's a judge, and like I said, I've noticed since Andrew Anglin got a little bit of problems on the internet, he's been trying to find servers, and he managed to get on a couple of servers. I think Cloudflare was one of them, who got rid of him under pressure again. But when they're told to get rid of these paedophilia websites, like I think it's Child City, I think I saw a webpage, they don't get moved. And obviously YouTube is the same, where they've got these videos, paedophile videos up, and they're getting flagged and not getting moved.
Yeah, they're quite happy to leave that up. They just want to move the nationalists. They just want to silence us. Quite happy to have as much degeneracy as you can find online. I mean, even the dark web was saying they didn't want the Daily Stormer on there, and that's full of absolutely depraved filth there. But they didn't want to have nationalists on there. But you're saying there about them saying they wanted to change the law with pedophilia, and I mean, they've already said in Britain that they're not going to lock all the paedophiles up, because if we locked all of them up, there wouldn't be any room in the prisons. I mean, that's a really shocking state to get into.
Oh, that's but
it's echoed in the Talmud, isn't it? In the Talmud,
well,
it says
again,
that they can.
One direction, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, it says that, you know, it's not a sin or a crime for them to rape 9-year-olds. It's not a sin for a mother to rape her 9-year-old. It's not a sin or a crime if they rape a 3-year-old, because a 3-year-old is not a woman. It's too young to have sex, so you can rape a 3-year-old. This is in the pages of the Talmud. This is the sort of depraved ideology and ideas that go through the Jewish mind. You wouldn't find anything like that in white literature. Nothing like that. These sick and twisted ideas are obviously going on in Jewry. Otherwise, they wouldn't have written it down in the Talmud that this is fine, this is okay. So, of course, now we're told, or what the Jews want to do is basically the Talmud for Gentiles. They want to bring in their Talmudic law, which is one law for the Jews and another law for the Gentiles. And part of it is this: sodomy is okay. Pedophilia is okay. No criticism of the Jews. Remember what they did in USSR? Criticism of the Jews was a capital punishment.
Yeah.
And they say...
Lord and Master.
It also says in the Talmud that until the Jews are actually in the ascendant, until they are running things, they've got to deny these things. They've got to pretend that they're not there and that's not what they're doing. But once they are in the ascendant, once they're at the top, then they can reveal themselves, which is the situation we're in now, where we know that it's Jews at the top. They don't hide it.
Well, that's the problem. You know, Jews will come out and say it and people don't believe them. What I meant to say was, even when the Jews admit it, and a lot of them do these days, people still don't believe them. They can't understand. One of the arguments is, it's impossible for all countries and all governments to all be in on this conspiracy because it's just impossible. But not when you know what happened after World War II, it's not.
Well, the other thing is, people don't understand that you've got Jews in all of these countries in the governments. Again, that's the connecting factor. That's what connects these secret societies up, and it's also what connects the countries up. That's why America will say one thing and Europe will echo it, and all around the rest of the world they'll echo it, and they'll all be saying, oh yeah, human rights, gay rights, we all want to be promoting this, and all the people in the country are saying, what, when did we ever want to have gay pride in our country?
They all back
one another up, and whenever any of these policies get actually talked about, the Jews will, the other Jews in the public will go along with it, and they'll say, well, yes, this is a good thing, because they know that it's good for the Jews. Whatever's good for the Jews, they do.
They have an inbuilt instinct in the agenda. I mean, the agenda obviously is for world domination, and every Jew seems to know this. We are even thinking about it, whether or not they learn about it at an early age, I don't know. But I saw Trudeau in Canada the other day. Oh my God. I mean, he couldn't give a more sickly speech about Israel. Really couldn't. You know, that's Canada. And what's Canada? Canada's usually a peacemaker in most people's eyes. And he say, we shall defend Israel come what may.
Well, again, they don't seem to fight among themselves about who can be the biggest servant to Israel. And do you remember David Cameron? I mean, he is part Jewish, but he was desperately trying to convince the Israelis that he was part Jewish as well.
Well, he had one of them Yamaha hats on, or whatever they're called.
Oh, they
he looked Jewish to me.
That hat.
I'm not saying he is, you know what I mean?
Well, it's it just seems to be something that politicians have to do before they can actually get anywhere. They have to pay their fealty to Israel. Every political group has to have a Friends of Israel section of it. Even UKIP have got a Friends of Israel section. Yeah. It's mandatory in this day and age.
The Labour Party will get more stick these days than anybody.
I think we do have a problem with Islam. And people see is they see Muslims infiltrating and taking over the government. But what they don't realize is what the Muslims are doing now is what the Jews were doing a century ago. And the Jews have succeeded in taking everything over. And that's why they're allowing these Muslims in, and why we've got a Muslim mayor. It's because the Jews were there doing it first. They succeeded in doing it.
Yeah, it works in their favor because they stay like a nationalist outfit, if you like. Israel doesn't accept any of these immigrants. They don't like Jews to marry non-Jews. They like to marry in their own, and that's what's kept them going, really, for 2,000 or 3,000 years. But all the rest of us have to accept all this immigration and race mixing. And even, I think it was one of the French prime ministers, I can't remember his name now, but he came out and said that if they didn't intermix naturally, then laws would be brought out for them to intermix. The greatest story ever told, that one.
Sarkozy, wasn't it? Saying they were going force the French to race mix, and that would do away with racism. But of course, they're not talking about the Jews there. This is the thing that people don't get. It doesn't matter which country the Jews are in, their loyalty will always be to the Jews and not to the country that they're with. And because of that, they're able to get away with all these crimes throughout the past. I mean, I'm just going to bring up here what we were discussing again before we started the program. I was sent an email from Richard Edmonds, a British nationalist, and he's talking about a book that's just been released from the it's a review in the London Jewish Chronicle of a book called Sons and Soldiers, which is an account of Jews who left Germany in the 30s and then returned after the war as US interrogators. And you can really see with this that the Jews are basically have their loyalty to these other Jews. But where they're claiming to be Americans, everyone else in the world is looking at them thinking, well, they're just American soldiers. They're just American interrogators. But they weren't American interrogators. They were Jewish interrogators. And if I read out some of these quotes from this, you'll see just what it is that they were up to. I'll read out a summary of it first. And this is a summary of this book, Sons and Soldiers by Bruce Henderson. It says, Sons and Soldiers tells the little-known saga of young German Jews, dubbed the Ritchie Boys, who fled Nazi Germany in the 1930s, came of age in America, and returned to Europe at enormous personal risk as members of the US Army to play a key role in the Allied victory. In 1942, the US Army unleashed one of its greatest secret weapons in the battle to defeat Adolf Hitler, training nearly 2,000 German-born Jews in special interrogation techniques and making use of their mastery of the German language, history, and customs. Known as the Ritchie Boys, they were sent in small elite teams to join every major combat unit in Europe, where they interrogated German prisoners of war and gathered crucial intelligence that saved American lives and helped win the war. And I think you can see from that, the special interrogation techniques that they were trained in was torture. Where they could use the German language and the Americans couldn't, I mean, they could just make up whatever they wanted. They could be threatening these Germans with whatever they wanted, and the Americans wouldn't have known. The Americans would have thought they were just honorable Americans. Why would they lie? These are Americans now. They're American citizens. Well, they're not. They were working for the Jews, and we know they hideously tortured these Germans and got them to say all sorts of lies. And I looked up some more from this in Wikipedia, and it says about the intelligence center that they were trained in, and it says they were specially trained in methods of intelligence, counterintelligence, interrogation, investigation, and psychological warfare. Yep. So psychological warfare on these Germans. And it says that the role of these soldiers was therefore to work in the front lines or behind them as strategic corps and army levels at interrogation, analyzing German forces and plans, and as members of US counterintelligence corps, and also to study and demoralize the enemy. And we know how they demoralized the enemy. They told the Germans that they'd been gassing all these Jews in the camps and made up all these horror stories. So it's quite open here. It doesn't tell you exactly how they demoralized the enemy, but these were the people that were doing it. It was these Jews doing this. And it says they helped break German resistance by demoralizing them, both in open and covert operations. And the covert ones we probably don't know about. It says they interrogated prisoners of war and defectors to obtain information about German force levels, troop movements, and the physical and psychological state of the Germans. A common interrogation tactic was to use the Germans' fear of transfer into Soviet custody. And what they were doing was saying, we're going to send your wife and your children and your family to the Bolsheviks for them to be raped and tortured to death. It wasn't the actual German prisoners of war they were threatening. So, of course, they were terrified of what these Jews were going to do to their families, giving them to the Soviets. And then it says, by means of targeted disinformation via newspaper announcements, flyers, radio broadcasts, and sound trucks, the German population and military were encouraged to cease their resistance to the Allied invasion. So it's telling you there that all the stuff that they put out, well, it doesn't actually tell you that it was the gas chamber myth, but the gas chamber myth was a big part of that. That was how they demoralized the Germans. They were all rewarded afterwards. They went on to successful political, scientific, or business careers. And many of them served as translators and interrogators during the Nuremberg trials. I think that really does hammer the nail in the coffin, doesn't it? They were there. They were the ones translating and interrogating during that kangaroo court where the Germans were forced to say things that just didn't even make any sense, making up places that didn't even exist that they were supposed to have gassed Jews in.
Well, they used that tactic of threatening to send the family to rush on Hess, the commander of Auschwitz, and he was just about ready to say anything after they finished with him. I mean, again, in the great story, it shows some photos, and he's a broken man. You can see this sergeant major is over the top of him, and he's like a little kid. He's completely broken.
He's just saying anything they tell him to say. He was signing things that have been written in English and German, I think, or the other way round. So it was obvious that he couldn't read what it was that had been put in front of him. And the people responsible for doing this, the American people, were told, oh, well, this is American interrogators and American translators. But what they were Jews. And the very people that had the biggest axe to grind against the Germans were the ones that were allowed to interrogate them and say what it was that they were saying. And the reason they were allowed to do that is because they weren't German Jews any longer. They were American Jews. So they were completely different.
I suppose they used that tactics. And, well, I suppose the British got them back to Britain and in the cages, and then they were tortured there. But and obviously some buildings act in Germany as well. But there was a hatred of these people coming over from America. Obviously, they did have an axe to grind. And I think, if my memory serves me well, I think Goering was interviewed by them.
I think they all were. I know that one of the presentations that Schmidt did, that had a Jewish interpreter in it, and he had an audio clip of this Jewish interpreter and what he was saying, and we know now that it was quite clearly that the guy was lying, and he was a torturer, and he talks about how he tortured these Germans, and he really relished torturing them. I mean, that's pretty much what they did.
There's some real cycles out there, isn't there?
They just handed over the prisoners of war who've just surrendered, the victims. They just handed them over to these vicious torturers that had been brought up in America to absolutely hate the Germans, because these Jews, once Adolf Hitler took power, it says they fled for their lives. They didn't flee for their lives. They knew that once Hitler took power, that the Jews were no longer going to get away with what they had been getting away with.
Yeah, exactly. Berlin was just a no-go for them then. They couldn't get away with what they got away with before, so they left.
The only ones that left were pornographers, bankers, people that were involved in all these shady deals, because there were plenty of Jews that stayed in Germany. There were Jews that fought for the National Socialists. There were Jews that continued working there. So it was only the ones that were harming the German people that actually left once Hitler came to power, and also the ones that could afford it. And how could they afford it? Well, they could afford it because they'd been fleecing the Germans. While the Germans were starving in the gutter, these Jews had been living it royal and buying up all the farms and running all the banks. So it was these ones that left. And they hated it. They hated the fact that they'd had this taken from them, and they wanted to take it back. So they had this hatred, and then they were sent over to take it out on the German prisoners of war, get them to tell all these lies. And then they were rewarded for it afterwards with all these plum jobs. And we know now that Germany is still run by all these Jews that went over there after the war. Didn't some of them were running East Germany, weren't they? And others became the politicians in West Germany. And I think you had an email sent to you that was just saying about how much, well, they say Zionist control in Germany, but I would say Jewish rather than Zionist, just about how much they do control things in Germany. And you think about
pretty much everything, really. They took over all the institutions. What Hitler had removed them from to start with, they just walked straight back in again, and the preferable jobs all went to the Jews and the Germans, the real Germans. What was left of them were the second class citizens again.
And they were able to take hold of the teaching jobs. They got rid of all the German teachers, the National Socialist teachers, and then brought in Jews in control of the teaching and what was supposed to be taught. And again, these Jews say that they're German, and Jewishness is just a religion. They're Germans, Dennis. They're not Jews. They're Germans. They just follow this funny little religion where they wear a little hat. That's all it is. That's the only difference. That's what they want to portray to people that
they are.
That's
the perception, yeah.
Yeah. And that's how they've been able to get away with everything that they've done. And this is,
well, this is why this dual citizenship is wrong. Because you can't serve two gods. But unfortunately, this is what they do. They've done it with America.
Well, dogs can't serve two masters, can it? But people just don't seem to think of that. They just think, well, what Jews? It can't be Jews. They're just 2% of the population, and it's just a religion. And what about the non-religious Jews? Surely they're not involved in it. I think a lot of the reason why people don't actually see who it is that's behind it is because people aren't used to looking at different breeds of white people. They don't think to actually look. They just see somebody and they think, oh, they're white. They've got white skin, even though it's a Jew. You know, it's only once you become racially aware you notice the small differences, don't you?
That's true. Yeah, I mean, they don't like being white, as they'll soon tell you. But obviously, they sacrifice what they need to get their agenda completed. And you know, if they have to go white, they go white.
Well,
even Christian.
Well, we know they've pretended to be Christian for quite a while. I mean, that's one way that you can say, well, Jewishness isn't just a religion, is to say, what about these Jews that now say they're Christian? What about these Jews that are atheist Jews? They still say they're Jews. They still retain their Jewishness. You cannot.
Well, I think they've got to get DNA tests as well to get into Israel, haven't they?
Yeah.
So that's not to do with religion.
Yeah. So one of the things that the conspiracy people will say is they will try and say that it's all Zionists. They won't like the fact that you say that it's Jews that are behind this. If they will accept that it's Freemasonry and it is involved in it, and then you say, well, and it's Jews that are behind that and the secret societies, then they'll get funny and say, well, it's Zionists. It's not all Jews. And then you have to explain to them.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, you've got to break it all up then, haven't you? Complicate things.
Yeah, I mean, when you think about Zionism, what is Zionism? Well, Jewish nationalism. Zionism is supposed to be Jewish nationalism, but what it's turned into is Jewish supremacy and Jewish nationalism for every country in the world. Instead of it just being Jews having their own homeland in Israel, which is what Zionism should be, it's become international Zionism. It's become Jews live in every country in the world and
like
take them over.
It's like a bastard communism, isn't it?
Yeah, and have their homeland in Israel that they can use as a bolt hole when they get caught committing crimes in the countries that they're in. So I think that's one way that you can break down those accusations, Dennis, that it's Jesuits and not Jews.
I don't doubt, like I said to this guy, you know, he thinks I'm simplifying things, but I don't doubt these other organizations rise that bit more in power when the Jews are around. But when that period in World War II, 33 to 45, the Jews didn't have the power they had in Europe they had previously. And so consequently, everybody else's power all drops down. Freemasons, they were cleared out. I'm quite sure, you know, they were cleared out to the Vatican as well. Mussolini did a job on them. Franco did a job on them. So things were squeezed. And so they have less influence. But as soon as the war is over, then just like as in Germany, they're back into Europe again and filling all the jobs. And suddenly we get all the lodges back in, Freemasons and lodges are back, and everybody's back to normal again. And what people think is normal, but actually is Jewish domination with the use of other organisations.
Well, if you look at the, just look at the names of these groups, like the Templars, and Freemasons go back to the Templars, and what were the Templars? They were the poor knights of the Temple of Solomon. And who is it that the Jews look up to? It was Solomon and his temple to all these different gods and goddesses and demons and angels. Yeah. And if you look at the Talmud, that's what it talks about. You know, it's not talking about the Solomon of the Old Testament that built a temple to God. They're talking of a temple that was all to gods and goddesses built with demons' hands and all this other stuff. It's a different Solomon, or at least the old Solomon that was corrupted by the time, he got old. He had thousands of wives and was totally corrupted. And that's the Solomon that the Jews look up to. And that's the Solomon that the Templars were looking up to. And they had a head, didn't they? It was called the Baphomet. And they were accused of worshipping a head and sodomizing one another. And this head was supposed to be called Baphomet or Baphomet. And they think that
that's... breasts.
Yeah, they think it's a cipher for... wisdom and worshipping wisdom. But it all came about from these knights going over to the Middle East and meeting these mystic Jews and these mystic Muslims and picking up their black magic practices off them, basically, and their banking practices, because the two go hand in hand.
Yeah, and then when they're coming back into Europe, and I've said this all along, when they're coming back into Europe and saying the turn of the whole thing on its head, saying that really it's the serpent who's the good guy, and it's God who's the bad guy, well, they're going to get some hammer. You know what I mean? Like, because Europe were more Christian then than it ever was. So, you know, I don't know what the temples were playing at, to be honest.
Well, that's an old one, isn't it? The old Gnostic heresy.
Yeah.
And that goes right back to the beginning of the Old Testament.
Where,
if you eat this fruit, then you'll be as one of the gods. And that's the whole thing of humanism, isn't it? Is worshipping
Freemason humanism,
man.
Yeah.
There's nothing higher.
You can become God.
Yeah, man is his own creation. Man is a God. Man can become a God. Hey, do you know what I think the reward for that is, Dennis? This delusion that we came from monkeys. Because on the one hand...
Well, I think all that is all part of it. I think it's the same with NATO as well, with the aliens and everything. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, I suppose you did a survey now in Europe. Probably more people are believing aliens than they would in God, I would think.
Well, I think, you know, it's bizarre. On the one hand, you've got them saying, well, man is his own creation. Man can do anything. Man can be a God. And yet, on the other hand, they're trying to say, well, man comes from monkeys. You know, his ancestor was a monkey.
Well, this is Darwinism, and it's, you know, I mean, to me, it's... you can't make something from nothing. I don't care. You know what I mean? Like when I say a laptop, I know a superior person to me has made that laptop. It doesn't just arrive from nothing. And so consequently, from that assessment right to the, you know, this big bang where someone's supposed to have gone off from this huge explosion, the only explosion in history that creates something.
Yeah, it's, are you still there, Dennis?
Yeah.
It's just it doesn't make sense. What we're told in science today doesn't make sense. What does make sense is what our religion told us, that the world was created by God. Everything was created in its separate kinds. Everything had its separate boundaries. And there was sin in the world. And you know, there is sin in the world. Everybody makes mistakes. We all fall short of the mark. And we know that we're all tempted to do wrong things. So, you know, it's quite clear that framework is what helped to build civilization. This idea that if we do wrong, we can ask for forgiveness of that. We can be forgiven for that if we really do repent and know that we have done wrong. And that helped to build our civilization because it helped to break down these feuds and you had confession and people could go and confess their sins and it helped to build a society and a knowledge of we come from somewhere. We have ancestors. We have to honor our ancestors. I mean, that's part of the Ten Commandments is honor your mother and your father. So you had to honor your ancestors and everything had been given to you. And you had to ensure that that was in a good way when you passed it on to your descendants. And that mindset
worked,
built the cathedrals.
You know, For thousands of years, that system worked.
Well, the science worked behind it as well. Don't forget the first science. We wouldn't even have science today if it wasn't for the church teaching people to read and write. It was the church behind all the education, all the schools, all the universities, getting so that all the members of the public could learn to read. I mean, they said they wanted them to learn to read so that they could read scripture and understand the scripture properly. But from that came the understanding of looking into science and mathematics, and all of it was taught by the church. It gets me when people say, oh, the church was anti-science. You just wouldn't have science today if it wasn't for the church.
Yeah, it's a good point.
And these monks writing down everything that we knew before as well, all the herb lore, all the traditions that we had, the beliefs, the understandings, the histories, all written down by Christian monks so that it could be passed on to us today. And at the same time, they were copying up all the Greek classics as well.
You know, right.
And now we're turning our back on all of that and saying, We don't want the church. We don't want God. We know better. We don't want history. We don't want culture. Yeah, and it's all
we're just going back to. Well, it's going back beyond Babylon, if you ask me.
Well, when you look at the Jews and the fact that they are anti-Logos, Christ was the Logos, and the Jews are the anti-Logos, the Antichrist. So they're this force of chaos and this force of revolution, constantly trying to turn everything on its head, constantly telling us that we can be as gods. Well, you know, we can't be as gods. I think the closest to being like the gods is just to be a pure white race. Because if you're a Mongol like the Jew, you're certainly nowhere near God.
The problem I have is sometimes if I'm arguing about Christianity and how all these other societies all fell that didn't have a God, didn't believe in God, you know, the problem I have is it's so twisted to, because if I'm talking to a person, he may be American, you know, and he looks at Christians as Christian Zionists who were all for Israel, which is totally different to the European Christians. So you've got to separate the two Christians now, you know what I'm saying? It gets complicated and it gets frustrating when a pagan will say to me that, we don't want this Jewish religion. Jesus was a Jew and all this kind of carry on. Even Hitler admitted he weren't a Jew.
Well, I think when you look at what the church used to teach, the church always used to teach that Shem, Ham and Japheth were all white. That's Noah's sons. Something along the line turned the offspring of Ham black. And the Jews said that that was Noah's curse. And the church took that up and said, okay, it must have been Noah's curse that turned Ham black. Basically, the descendants of Ham interbred with Negroes. And then we are still white. Japheth is still white. We're supposed to be the descendants of Japheth, the Europeans. So what happened to the Jews? Why do they look like Arabs? Why have they got the hooked nose and the dark skin? Well, obviously, those descendants must have interbred with the Arabs as well. But Jesus wasn't one of those. He was from the house of David. So Jesus was of the same race as Japheth, and the church teaches Europeans are descended from Japheth. So Jesus had to have been exactly the same race as the white race today. He couldn't have been looking like the Jews. Because,
exactly.
You know,
in fact, I think the only Jew in his whole following there, you know, the apostles, was
Judas.
What's he called? Judas. I forget his name.
If you look into it as well, you look where all the disciples came from in Galilee. Don't forget, Galilee wasn't Judea. That was all filled with the tribe of Benjamin. Tells you in, I think, the book of Nehemiah, in the book of Ezra, it tells you that all the Benjaminites moved to that area. And you've got Paul of Tarsus, St. Paul. He says he was from the tribe of Benjamin as well. So you've got all the disciples are Benjaminites living in Galilee of the Gentiles. That was what it was called. You've got Jesus from the house of David, who was obviously of pure race. And you've got Paul from the Benjaminites. So there's not even any Judeans there, let alone Jews like today. The Jews like today, their ancestor was Herod. Herod, who they call Herod the Great, and the Christians call him Herod the Baby Killer. He was the one that put all these, gave the Pharisees all the influence that they had, and he made the high priest and the Sadducees and the Sanhedrin, and he appointed them all and sucked up to the Romans. And he was part Canaanite. he was part Edomite, and all the majority of the Pharisees and the rest of them, they were all this mongrel, mixed race, Canaanite breed. And that's who your Jews today go back to. And that's why Jesus was, telling them that they had a different father to him, that they were the sons of the devil, the synagogue of Satan, all these things. That's why they were different ethnicity.
One of these pagans, the ones that ever got me, I'd love to try and sit them down with Sarah Silverman and say to Silverman that, Jesus is a Jewish institution, because I'm quite sure she'll abuse him.
Well, that's just it, isn't it? I mean, the most virulently anti-Christian people through all the centuries have been the Jews. In their prayers, they curse the Christians. They slander.
Do it again.
Yeah, what she says is exactly pretty much what the Talmud is saying. They absolutely hate.
This is my argument.
I just have to listen to E. Michael Jones, and he'll explain all the metaphysics of it. This dichotomy you've got: Christ on one side and the Jews on the other.
Is that simple. There's a force of good and evil, whether religious or not, and this force of good and evil have been at it since time begun, and this is simply it's the same, Christ against the devil. It's the same thing.
Yeah, the force of evil that offers you material rewards in this life, and the force for good offers you spiritual rewards in the afterlife and in this life.
Because you can get one of these contracts with Lucifer. I was reading up on it the other day, and it says you get all the worldly possessions and everything that goes with riches and everything you want. As long as you bring this one soul every year, and you sign this contract in blood, but the catch is obviously, if you miss bringing a soul, then he takes yours for eternity.
No, I don't doubt that's probably happened at some point. You hear of it, don't you? That guitar player sold his soul to the devil. But at the same time, it's also an allegory of what goes on. If you go after material goods and you try to promote the idea of consumerism,
greed is good.
Yeah, greed is good. You'll become materially wealthy, but spiritually you'll be like a desert. You won't be able to trust anyone. You won't be able to form close relationships with people. Your life won't have any meaning.
Does that mean if I'm spiritually endowed? Yeah,
spiritually well endowed. Yes. Yes, I think it does.
That sounds good. Yeah, that's fair enough.
I think it does. It is an allegory for that, isn't it? It's a mythic.
Yeah, I agree.
Happening.
Yeah, I totally agree. But the communists themselves did communism by the back door. The ex-KGB guy who moved to America, I forgot his name now, but he gave a series of speeches, and I actually did one he said, why we need God. In one of the episodes, and he listed all the places which had denounced God and removed them out of society. They all fell. Babylon, Mayans, but people never learn. They think that they can manage without these. They don't need any rules or regulations, because do what thou wilt. But people forget people's levels of depravity differ. And so what will be all right for one will not be all right enough for another, and so consequently you will get a problem at some stage.
Well, also, when you've got a higher principle that you're appealing to, and when you say that your rights come from God, they come from a higher principle, then they can't be taken away from you.
Exactly.
If your rights are given you
striving
in
to do.
Yeah, if you've got a United Nations Declaration of Human Rights, that's not a God-given right. That's not a God-given right, is it?
It's a Bolshevik given right. There ain't many.
when you go to the commandments of the Old Testament, and when you look at the Bible, these things we used to look upon as these were God-given laws. You couldn't change these. Was unlawful.
Nobody man enough to be able to do that, because obviously these are God-given. So whoever comes along, sort of problem.
Oh, yeah, it was off limits. You couldn't overturn the death penalty for sodomy. couldn't overturn usury being the equivalent of murdering someone. You couldn't overturn the marriage law and say that it's fine to fornicate and adulterate with other races. You couldn't overturn that because that was instituted by God. That was natural law. And what they've had to do, these Jews, is destroy our faith in God so that they could then convince us that our politicians are the ones that make the laws. When they don't Correct. Make the laws. They're supposed to enforce the laws given them by God, and that's why we were given authority. But we were given kings. We weren't given prime ministers in democracy and all these different parties and all this confusion. We were given one person at the top, and we were supposed to stick with that one person at the top and his descendants. But we ended up murdering them. We listened to the Jews, and they said, well, if you get rid of the king, you'll be better off. And of course, we weren't better off because the king was the one that stood up for us. We may have got bad ones, didn't always have good ones, but we still had some really, really good kings in the past. I mean, every country has got a so-and-so the great, at least one, that did amazing things for the nation. But we never had a so-and-so the great prime minister.
I think it was listening to you, actually, where, you know, I could understand the fact that some kings were huge nationalists. Wanted to rule the country which they wanted to rule, which was, you know, sound and good morals. But obviously, like you said, there was the odd ones that, I mean, it's really surprised me that this royal family hasn't said a dicky bird about the change in London of, you know, it's no longer an English capital. I think Mohammed is the most popular name now in London, and not a single word has been spoken about it.
I think they're completely corrupted. They got rid of the last king, didn't they? That was the last good king that we had that was around that approved of Adolf Hitler.
That's
and they
right.
got rid of him and put Queen Elizabeth there, who just does everything that she's told. I do wonder how things would have turned out if they'd kept the one before her. They set him up, didn't they?
Yeah, well, it's a documentary on him, actually. Like, it was quite interesting. He seems to have been as popular as what Lady Di was.
Now, he wasn't happy about the way that the people, the miners and the workers were being treated.
Correct.
He really wasn't happy. I think Winston Churchill shot some miners, and he was really annoyed about that. And he went over to see Hitler, and he saw what National Socialism was doing, and he wanted to see that in Britain. He stood up for his people. And what is a king if he doesn't have a people?
Yeah, well, he was in Wales, apparently, and they were showing him the side of Wales that they wanted him to see. But he took a detour, like, and he ended up talking to this woman, obviously of ordinary commoner, so to speak, and he said, can I come in for a cup of tea? And she's nothing in the house, she's no food, she's nothing. And he was gobsmacked. And when he got back to London, he put waves in, you know, in order to try and sort someone out, because he just couldn't see how subjects like that could be checked that way. He really was a good guy.
Well, the king used to be the champion for the poor, not the champion for the nobles and the bankers. They were his rival. They were the ones always trying to take the power from him, and that's why the banks are now the crown. The City of London is the crown. It's no longer the monarch. It's the banks in that square mile. But before, it was the king that stood up for the poor people, and it was also the church that stood up for them.
Yeah,
and what they did, they got both of them out of the way, because the church used to be responsible for the food for the poor, and the rich would be expected to just give to the church. The church would manage it and give that to the poor.
Which is the Christian thing to do.
Yeah. And they pushed the church out of the way and brought in the welfare state. And now you've got the welfare state. They can just remove that, which is what they've done to disabled people. Remove
That's
the
right.
benefits. So they lose their cars. They can't pay the rent. So many disabled people have ended up dying after being found fit for work. Nothing like that could have happened if it was the church, because the church wouldn't take away the only means you've got to live. But the government will do that, because their whole thing is about just increasing the economy, thinking about money. They've got no concern for the people, the ethnicity.
Let's just go to the root of problems, then. You know, I've lived in this place for a long time, and I've never heard anything but cuts. Not once have I heard, like, that, you know, we're all going to get a pay rise, and you know that, you know, the country's really doing well. Always been cuts, always been cutbacks since I can remember.
Well, you remember, you think what it must have been like under Adolf Hitler to be told that your wages were going to go up.
Where government wants the nation to rise.
Yeah. Wages are going to go up. You're all going to be able to afford a house.
Your
four children and you've got a free house. You're all going to have paid holidays. We're building these ships so that you can go off in these steamships on cruises. We're going to make laws so that you have clean air. We're going to make sure that you get fed. Women could go away for if they were housewives, they could go away for a little break and they would be safe knowing that their children would be looked after by the other young girls in the village. And they'd go away and they'd have a week's break and they'd learn how to do domestic things, cooking and all the good things, housekeeping, all the good things that women do. They'd get trained in doing that while they were on holiday.
Yeah, they got trained in those.
And they'd go back and they'd be good wives to their husbands. It's just an idyllic life, isn't it, when you think about it? And you imagine being told that by the government. Instead of being told, cuts, more taxes, we're going to cut back on welfare.
All taxes going up, your dole's going down, you're not eligible for sick pay. Just misery, constant misery. But someone's getting rich, you know they are, because they've always got money for another war.
You think how much unemployment they had. Imagine them saying, well, we're going to get the whole country back to work. And within 3 years, they had
6 million, the magic figure.
Yeah, 6 million. 6 million people back to work within 3 years. And I forget the percentage increase on wages that it was as well. People today, wages are stagnant. The last 5 or 6 years, there's been no increases in the wages. They're stuck at like a 1% increase.
Yeah, 1% increase, plus both parents are working. We're also, the male could earn enough for everybody. So it's been really, they've really cut back to the bone. Prices don't stay the same. So, someone's really rich.
Now, you think we're talking now about what a shock that must have been for the Germans to have Adolf Hitler doing this. But this would have been the natural thing when you had a king a thousand years back.
That's how things should be when a country's sorting themselves out. I mean, you can't say every country's going to be like that because it depends who's in charge, intelligent-wise as well as, ideology. But the point is the Germans had a leadership which found another way, another financial means, not by means of usury, which penalises everybody. I mean, I saw a thing on the TV the other day. Some bailiffs were calling around to this guy. They wanted, I think he owed £80,000 to his ex-girlfriend who didn't really need the money but was obviously vindictive and wanted the money as quick as possible. So he agreed to pay £6,000 on his credit card.
Those credit cards are just something else. Everything you put on that is
false economy.
Everything you put on that is just creating money for the Jews and the banks to then get back off you. They don't give anything out. It's all created, and you have to pay for every penny on that you've just created. Credit cards.
The problem
are a huge
scam. If you just do the lost payment, then you never pay it off.
Well, that's what they want, isn't it? That's what they want. They don't want you to pay it.
That's exactly what they want. Yeah.
And then they can just cream in that money for doing absolutely nothing. This is why all the early church fathers were so against usury. You cannot have this. This is wicked. This is as evil as murdering satanic. Someone. It was a grave, grave sin, usury was. And they all spoke out against
countries.
But again, it's no coincidence that it times in with the Renaissance and humanism and the Enlightenment when they changed the laws on usury.
Yeah.
That was when they changed it. Dennis, we're coming near to the end of the podcast, so just let people know where they can find your work before we finish.
Yeah, Grace, so I never told. I mean, we're still up and running on YouTube. I don't know how long for. Communism by the Back Door is another one, and obviously I'm still working on part 7 of The Secret Masonic Victory of World War II, which is looking more and more evidently every time I do a part.
Okay, well, we'll look forward to maybe seeing that next week. So thank you very much for coming on.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah, thank you very much, listeners, for listening. We'll be back next Friday with another Truthful Out Radio for you, and we hope you all go out and have a great weekend.
Everyone.